Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome as Para-X presents Keeping the Spirits Alive. This is a show that represents a fresh perspective into the world of paranormal investigating and related topics, and how history plays an important role in keeping the spirits alive. This is your co-host, Chip Reichenthal, and while we're preserving history one location at a time, I'm proud to introduce our host, founder of the renowned paranormal investigative team, Glory Haunt Hounds, Mr. John Tobin.
Welcome to another edition of Keeping the Spirits Alive, and boy, what a special edition we have this week. The person doing our theme song, that was a weird theme song, Mr. John Carpenter, legendary director, is joining us this week, as well as, guess who else? Chip Reichenthal.
Ah, I know him.
I know that guy. Chip, what's going on? Wow, what a show.
What a show indeed, John, and it's like both of us kind of have to step back and
any show that makes you go, yeah, is awesome in my book.
Especially if it makes me do that. John's been looking forward to that for almost a year now.
I have. It's been great. And that was awesome. John Carpenter, legendary director of such movies, of course, as Halloween, that we just played the theme for, mixed in with our theme.
Which was a very nice touch, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Yep. And The Thing, Escape from New York.
Yep.
Christine.
Yep.
Man, the list goes on. They live.
They live. Starman.
Starman. Oh, yeah. Academy Award nominated Starman for the Jeff Bridges performance. Wow. It goes on and on and on. And this is something that I was so excited that Mr. Carpenter agreed to do this interview with us. And I can't wait to bring him on. Very, very psyched.
Yeah, indeed. And it's exciting. I mean, there's just so many things to John Carpenter. And yes, the John Carpenter.
The John Carpenter.
That word is woven into his introduction.
Yeah, this is not like some guy named John who happens to be a carpenter.
That's right.
Nope, this is the John Carpenter.
That's right.
And although that would be clever, but we got the real guy.
It would be, but it's kind of fitting for the month that we've had, really, because, you know, we're both in movies now.
That's true.
Well, John and I both have been invited into the picture from our friends at Deftone Picture Studios, called John.
A Grim Becoming.
A Grim Becoming. And not only is this going to be great, it's kind of scary and funny at the same time, but our friend Mike Shabrassi.
Oh, you said it right.
I finally said it right. It took almost a year for me to do that. It's the role of a lifetime for him, and he's already in the teaser trailer. And if you get a chance, take a look on Facebook and see him.
It's on. I posted it on Facebook. You probably did or will. And it's going to be. It's on YouTube too. So if you type "Grim Becoming" teaser trailer on YouTube, you'll find it that way. If you can't find it on Facebook,
yeah. And it's just because he's such a sweet, nice, gentle guy, you know. But in this role, he's scary.
I mean, yeah, he's very frightening. I mean, I've seen the teaser trailer half a dozen times now, and it's still creepy.
Yeah,
it's
real creepy. It chills. It really does.
And I think the last time I saw it was at the Ombuds premiere a week ago, and he was sitting next to me, and he started talking in that voice. And I'm like, Mike, stop. Don't do that. Freaking me out.
I think I have to get up and get something, anything right now.
Yeah, pee at that point.
Yeah, that's what pretty it was. Much. Jeez. Right where you were.
I almost didn't make it. What I'm going to be doing right now, I'm going to be doing this right now, introducing your Monday Night Delight, the co-host with the most, the T-Rex of Para-X, the guy who sits next to me, that doesn't rhyme, I don't know, Mr. Chip Reichenthal with Chipisms. Take it away, brother.
Thank you, John, and thank you all. Yes, we walketh unto the glow of our golden hour for this week's Chipism, wallowing in the glory of the moment in honor of this week's guest, highly renowned movie director John Carpenter. Yes, that John Carpenter, who has moved us all as fans of horror movies, bringing us some of the very best moments in films like Halloween, Christine, They Live, Starman, and John Carpenter's The Thing. Good thing he was part of that one since the name was there, you know. But there is some kind of genuine thrill here, getting to talk with such a legend, and it caps off a great month of salutes to the horror film genre, great film directors like Mara Katria and Adam Steigert, then wonderful film actor Michael Berryman, and now John Carpenter. Now, he's got a pretty cool backstory, coming from a small Kentucky town into the big city of Los Angeles. I wonder what that transition must have been like. The big city is, at least potentially, quite a different living than small-town life. I know a few people that had a tough time with it. I went to college in Miami and got to be streetwise in pretty quick measure. Not to mention how it seems that places where the sun warmly shines all year round are places where you always have a chance to get into trouble. Even working in the paranormal realm, learned more about so-called evil energies in sunny places than I did in seasonal ones. It could be my imagination, but it seems like more bad stuff goes down where it's summer year-round, if only because there's more nice days outside, or perhaps when it gets too hot and tempers flare. I did, though, study the nature of malevolent energies from a guy in California, and in that study was shown examples of people who lost their way in pursuit of fame or power or attention at all costs, and in Hollywood there was the ideal place to thrive in all of those, or to suffer for it. We used to have this rule where if you're going into a paranormal investigation and come across the kind of thing that moves things or can move objects, if it moves more than a pound's weight, then it's something you should avoid. At least that was the rule for this guy, but it seems accurate enough, and lots of heavy objects moving about in California, seemingly, at least back then. Now, on a related note, I've seen a couple of things recently, stories online or reports or even witnessed, situations that may stain our paranormal industry's reputation, and I feel the need to remark upon it. Paranormal unity has been something that John and I have been hopeful for, and we are outspoken in its regard, I think. But as long as John and I have known each other, the idea of faking evidence was never even mentioned. I mean, our minds just don't go there. It's a mission for us to get good evidence, and doing anything to shortcut or undermine that process defeats the reasons we're doing it in the first place. Now, I know there's stories about people we know who are accused of it, and I have even seen a report recently of someone deliberately doing it for some sort of addiction to fame or just for the publicity. Someone faked many things, even got into locations deceitfully just for extra publicity. I truly think I know our listeners. And just like the people we have befriended or people who have been guests on our show, we've been fortunate enough to be surrounded by good people, humble people, focused people who strive for knowledge, who want to normalize the most remarkable things of all, who don't even think about forging, faking, or creating evidence. As where is the fun in that? This is an industry interesting enough without the need to defraud. And all the people I know who can be considered famous in the paranormal got there on their integrity. I hope I don't have to be brutally shocked again by learning of someone who had been in our midst or path and created paranormal evidence in order to get on a show or a feature or a news clip. I have enough pains to endure, and it makes it much harder for all of us good people with a deep and honest quest for the truth. Makes it harder to investigate locations, especially ones already hesitant. Makes it harder to give good credence or credibility to theories we've formed in our deep tenure. Makes it harder to cross fields of research with scientists, historians, politicians, property owners, psychologists, theologians, TV producers, even the people in areas that are sunny year-round and prone to get into more trouble. If you find yourself tempted to fake evidence, stop yourself. If you tell me you are faking evidence, be prepared for me to turn you in. I know I'm preaching to the choir here, for the most part, but I didn't think it would reach a point where I'm inspired to preach in the first place. I know most all of you listening wouldn't even think to do that, and you are rewarded today by getting to hear how John Carpenter got started, how he feels about his projects, and what's next for him. Ladies and gentlemen, I salute Mr. John Tobin, not only for his diligent works in our industry, but for getting us an audience with this week's guest, the John Carpenter. John.
Thanks, Chip. What a great chipism. I like that one because I understood it from yes, beginning did. To end.
And you like to hear me rant every once in a while.
I do. It's a mild-mannered reporter, Chip Reichenthal here.
Right, getting a little angry.
Yeah, you wouldn't like him when he's angry. He's starting to turn green and his shirt's busting open. It's crazy.
It is that, yes. Even the birds are afraid.
Before we bring on Mr. Carpenter, which we'll do in just a second, mm-hmm. I do want to mention, too, we have a return of a segment that's been off the air here with us for a few weeks now due to different circumstances.
Yes, we do.
And we are bringing back the very popular What's Weird with John Tenney segment. So don't leave just because Mr. Carpenter and I and Chip are done speaking.
That's right.
Believe me, it will be fun and weird when John Tenney joins us this week for the return of What's mm-hmm. Weird. So
yep,
what
an
action-packed show we have for you
How
this week.
How about that, yes.
And yeah, it's going
to
be great.
The return of John Tenney to cap off beginning to speak with the John Carpenter.
The John Carpenter.
Awesome.
So let's do that. We have the amazing director, John Carpenter, believe it or not.
Yes,
believe it or not. He's joining us here today on Keeping the Spirits Alive. This is Director's Month, both future and... directors who have wonderful career achievements, and mm-hmm. Mr. John Carpenter fits into that role completely. Certainly somebody that I've admired for years, and I'm very excited to get going with this. So without further ado, let's bring him on the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Great, John.
I'm doing terrific. Thanks.
Good, good. How's things out in sunny California?
Well, things are beautiful out here today. A little chilly. I think we've trapped that rogue cop.
Oh, really?
I think we got him pinned down.
I thought he was in Mexico.
No, he's up in Big Bear apparently holed up in someone's house. He did a home invasion, and anyway, we got him pinned down. I hope.
Well, I hope so too.
Let's hope there's no further injuries, casualties of any type, and it ends in safely. And I thought it was because
Charlie Sheen reached out to him. That must have been the clincher right there.
I don't even know what that means, but I'll go along with that.
Well, he felt victimized by his boss and akined his life to that of Charlie Sheen's without saying winning or anything like that. And Charlie Sheen actually offered to, say, call me, we'll talk. And
just to warn you, John, Chip may have gotten that off the internet, in which case it's probably not
inaccurate,
true, but he believes everything he reads. So
I do. It's my
favorite. That's a good thing. You know what? That's nice of him to do that. That's cool. That's a cool deal. I like that.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Thank you so much.
So, I'm not really sure where to begin, but let's start where most people know you from. Well, people know you from everywhere, but the most famous thing that I can think of is the 35th anniversary this year of a mm-hmm. little movie called Halloween.
What's the 31st?
35th, I believe, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Time flies, right?
That's a long time ago, man.
Yep.
Actually, you did the theme music for that, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, I did.
Absolutely. That's
awesome.
That's been my ringtone for I don't even know how many years now.
That's right. We gave,
you're a great man. You're a great human being.
We gave Mike Oldfield a run for his money on that one.
Yep.
You were in a band called the Coupe de Villes, and what was your instrument back in when you were?
Well, the Coupe de Villes were a bunch of buddies from film school. So we mainly just played guitars and sang, and we were the informal group, and we're all still alive. We haven't performed in a long time, though, because we're all kind of enjoying not having to be in the spotlight. We love just kind of settling back and relaxing, but it was a lot of fun. I wrote some songs and did some singing, and it was a whole lot of fun.
So nice. Let me ask you this, John. What was I'm going to go back because I started asking about Halloween being the 35th anniversary this year. Just to go all the way back, what was your inspiration to make that movie and to come up with the character of the Shape or Michael Myers? What inspired you to do this? To me, this is the greatest of the slasher genre ever made, and the direction and the way it's done, Just the never knowing what's going to happen kind of aspect of it all, and it really was groundbreaking. What inspired you to make that movie, or where did you get the idea for it?
Well, this was a movie that was an assignment. It was producer said, you know what? We've raised some money to make low budget exploitation movies, so let's make a movie about a babysitter murders, about a killer who stalks babysitters. What do you think? And I said, okay. But if I do that and I direct it, I want final cut, and I want my name above the title.
Okay.
And so that was all we had to begin with.
Wow.
So basically I just fashioned this little urban tale horror movie. And the big difference between Halloween and, say, any number of other movies of the time was that the protagonist, the killer, Michael Myers, was essentially part man, part human, part supernatural.
Mm.
Couldn't die. And he was everywhere in the dark. He was sort of evil personified.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different, to me, it was a different way of going in terms of a horror film. And that way it gave me an excuse to play around with the audience, their expectations. He may be behind you. He's out there in the dark somewhere. And by putting the audience in the eyes, through the eyes of the main characters, Jamie Lee and P.J. Souls, Nancy Loomis, they were experiencing along with the girls what was going on. So that was generally it. It was pretty straightforward, simple horror tale, except for that one little change with the bad guy.
Right. And I think that was a brilliant change, and certainly changed the way horror films were made after that. I wanted to ask you about a particular scene that I always stands out for me. The shape in the beginning of the movie, as a child, when the setup is made and how what happens and when he goes on his rampage as a child, putting the mask on. I always made the connection between that scene and the scene where Michael Myers comes in and P.J. Souls is in the bed. And he comes in with the sheet over his head and the glasses on.
She thinks it's
the boyfriend. And I think, in my interpretation of that, is he's coming. He's kind of reliving sort of where it all started and going back kind of in the mask and disguising himself. And a lot of people find humor in that scene, but I find it to be the character kind of connecting back with his youth. Can you explain? Am I onto anything there? Or am I just?
You are. I think you have it exactly right. I couldn't add anything to that.
Wow! Thank you.
Absolute genius.
Thank you so much, boy. For years I thought that, and I thought I think that's what we're seeing here. But you know, if not, a lot of folks have said, "Oh, that's really funny." You know, he's pretending to be a ghost, and there's no other points really in the movie where you see him display so much personality and humor, and I think it's great to show. It really shows a human side to the shape.
Okay, well, sounds good to me.
Works for him, John.
Very good. So I'm glad. Thanks for making me look smart.
Yeah, I think
my pleasure.
As a moviegoer, especially back in that time period, you know, it's my best friend and I from high school, and we would really embrace these films, especially films of yours, you know. What we really appreciated is it leaves enough to the viewer's imagination where they can fill in the blanks, you know. It's encouraging to see it. I think maybe, I don't know if it's just us, but nowadays with some of the newer films that are coming out, they seem more mean-spirited than back in my golden days, and also leave less to the imagination, and they hit closer to like some real fears, brashly, like terrorism or home invasion or kidnapping, and they take the fun out of them. Is it our imagination that they're just getting more mean-spirited and less imaginative?
Well, I don't know about less imaginative. Let me put it this way. Horror has been around since the beginning of cinema, and it adapts itself to every new generation. That's kind of its magic. So a horror film really amplifies what scares the audience now. Mm. And listen, back in the 70s, there was a bunch of mean-spirited, scary, violent movies made. Mm. You know, people tend to remember those days as some sort of golden age. Well, that isn't really true. There were some tough films made back then. So
sure.
I don't know that they're better or worse. They're just of their generation, which is what they should be.
Yeah, true.
I would say, you know, that makes a lot of sense. But one thing I do want to mention, as a director, you're known, you know, a lot of people know you as the director of great horror films. You've directed many great films of many different genres. Mm. I will give you credit for being the only director to ever make me pee my pants when I saw The Fog in the theater.
I've been trying to do that for a long time.
And, yeah. Oh, my God.
I haven't peed my pants in a long time. But I'm telling you, you know, growing up in New England and having been to a lot of those similar type places, you know, with the lighthouses and the areas, I just saw this and I'm like, you know, it just really, to me, it was just the atmosphere. You always had a unique way of setting up a scene.
Oh, and, great atmosphere.
And even as a young man, I was in awe of how you could just, you know, bring me in and make me feel like I was there, like on, you know, part of the movie. And that's what I think that you've always been able to do with a lot of the movies you make. I want to mention one of your more recent films that I rewatched again for probably the second or third time last night, The Ward, which love.
Mm. Oh, thanks.
I love that movie. I think it was brilliant. And the twist in that movie, for anyone who hasn't seen it, is just, you'll never guess it, and it's great. And it just goes, you know, one of the things we spotlight a lot on the paranormal. We do a lot of paranormal type things. Mm-hmm. And so the ghost and paranormal type element in that movie is something we haven't seen in a lot of your other films. So
yeah,
what was the inspiration behind The Ward? And I have a fascination with some of these old hospitals. I know this was a ward of another hospital, but it's very asylum-ish and nature, and some of the treatment of the patients back then. You know, I find the movie like The Ward to be such a human study. Some people at first look may think of it as just a horror movie, but it's really a human movie. Mm. And I think you bring that out in the main character, in all the characters in the film. You know, after of all the movies you've done, what was the draw to The Ward? I think it's brilliant, and I just want to congratulate you on making such a good movie.
I agree.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, listen, you know, it came along at the right time. It was a low-budget film. It was an enclosed, kind of trapped location. We shot it in an abandoned mental facility wing up in Spokane, Washington. And it was an ensemble cast of girls, which I hadn't really done before. Hmm. And I just thought, well, this will be fun to do. And I got a really, really talented cast, just amazingly talented cast, led by Amber Heard. And it was a ghost story, but it's a psychological ghost story. Mm. I think that's what separates it from maybe some of the other things I've done. I had a blast making that film. I really, really enjoyed it.
And it's nice that we're embracing women in horror films, because I think the topic came up earlier.
True.
Always. We know the girls are the most important part.
And I just thought it was a really good examination of the human mind and certainly the ways the human mind was looked at and treated in that time frame when that took place. You know, for those of you who haven't seen The Ward, definitely you can go. You can get it on Netflix. You can buy the DVD. Watch that movie, because there's stuff that happens in there that'll just make you go, wow. You know, I didn't see that coming, and only from the direction of John Carpenter could it be presented in such a way.
Quite that way. Yeah, it's awesome and worthwhile. And John and I...
you guys are... I'm going to hire you guys.
Hey,
hang around with me.
We're available.
It is.
See, we're country boys, too, basically, at heart, you know.
Is that right? Okay,
yeah,
good.
I don't know if we can handle Los Angeles as long as you have, but, you know.
Well, you were originally born in New York. Is that correct? We're here in New York.
I was born in northern New York, but I grew up... Mm-hmm. In southern Kentucky, in a little town called Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Oh, Bowling Green, yes. Sure.
Yeah.
And that's where I spent most of my youth, and I moved from Bowling Green right to Los Angeles, and I haven't left here since. It's just the greatest.
Chip kind of wanted to ask you about
spot in the universe, gentlemen.
he wanted to ask you about that transition. And
yeah, did it take? I mean, my wife and I honeymooned in Los Angeles, you know, and
good for you.
We thought we had tough skins, but we learned quickly. As a Kentucky boy coming to Los Angeles, you know, in your early adulthood, how long did it take you to harden, for lack of a better word?
Well, when I first arrived, you know, I didn't have any clue what was going on. Mm. But as I went to USC.
Nice.
I went to go to school, and I went up there, and I found an apartment to live in, and I moved in, and I just fell in love with Los Angeles. It felt like when I got here, I was coming home.
Mm.
And this is where I belong. It was a big city. It had the industry that I loved and was coming to study in film school. And just everything about the city was just really appealed to me. But now, you mentioned that you and your wife honeymooned here, but did you have some problems while you were here?
Well, it's just, you know, we'd go near the beaches, and you get all these, you know, I'm a kind of a small-framed dude, you know. My brain does most of the talking for me.
he's that 98-pound weakling from all the old cartoons.
Yeah, basically.
Gotcha, okay.
And we'd have these, you know, really, really big muscle guys come up and hit on my wife, you know, and try to cast me aside, and I would do my best, I guess, Woody Allen impersonation and say, excuse me, but you don't mind if I take her back, do you? You know, but I just, you know, nowadays with all the onslaught of 24-hour news cycles and entertainment this and entertainment that, and you can and paparazzis, and you can really grasp the mean spiritedness a little better. But it was still there 25 years ago when we were there, or, you know, or earlier. It's just like when we first went to Florida. It's gorgeous. You know, the palm trees, the sun shines, the rusty cars, the rust shines. But the people are rather bolder and a little crass. And it's
kind of kill or be killed,
it just seemed like.
I
was wondering if you found it.
Man, I didn't realize you had such hostility towards these American cities.
I've personally been to L.A. Several times, and I've always found everybody to be very nice. I think it's just Chip, to be honest.
It's
with
probably.
I think you're right. L.A. is one of the nicest places in the world. I would admit sometimes there's a little bit of mean spiritedness afloat, but gee whiz, hey Florida, is there any place you do like?
Well, yeah, I. Here in Albany, New York, is good. Bowling Green, Kentucky, I like.
Albany, New York. Wow, you're up there. That's cold, guys.
It is. Oh, yes, yes, it is. It is cold. It is. You're right. I'd rather be where you are, I have to admit.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you live in the snow? I don't understand.
We don't either.
We were raised here, and, you know, and life goes on, and before you know it, you've been here years and years. And
now, listen, how did that big snowstorm affect you guys, this last that just happened?
We got lucky.
We did get lucky, yeah.
The Boston area got hit a lot harder.
We got probably 6 to 8 inches here, but the Boston area, where I'm from, that area, closer to Massachusetts growing up, and they got crushed with a couple feet of snow and put out of commission for a couple days. But overall, we got pretty lucky with that. So
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I think 6 to 8 inches is what we got. Whereas places, entire cities, I think Connecticut and Massachusetts both, every road in the state was closed down. So we didn't have that misfortune.
So let me.
See, this is why I ask you, why do you live there?
we don't know.
Why do you put up with this?
It's change of seasons.
We're waiting for a big break in the next John Carpenter film to come along so we can go to L.A.
That's exactly it. Speaking of which, we've never made a horror movie, but, you know, we have been in the paranormal investigative industry for each over 20 years. We were just curious if you had ever had any kind of paranormal experience yourself, anything personally.
Zero. The only, you know, to me, the supernatural exists in movies, and that's where it really lives. Mm-hmm. It lives on, and it always will. I'm not so certain about real life. I've never had a paranormal experience. How about you guys? Have you actually seen a ghost?
We have, and I think it really comes down to, in most cases, what you're looking for.
Yeah.
If you're not looking for it, you're not going to see it. So if you don't go around looking for it like we do, it's not going to come to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In my opinion, I mean, it could, unless it's just a chance encounter, and most people don't have those. Yeah.
And we also see a lot of investigators have had initial experiences that were fear-based, and most of our initial experiences were with relatives or friends, and there's a kind of a love-based element there. And there is a lot of fear-mongering in this industry, and some of the paranormal entertainment is kind of geared to entertain more so than educate. So you see people running from these hidden things in the dark, and just because they can't see them, there seems to be some evil element to it, which I think is really for, just like you said, the horror film genre, and not so much our experiences seeking communication with basically these invisible things. It's fascinating to us. But we, even with my aspect of Los Angeles, try to keep a very positive outlook and encourage other investigators to think in positive terms with these things.
Okay, all right.
So let's get back to some of your films. One of the things I wanted to bring up to you, because it stuck with me, and I don't know how many times I've quoted this, but the classic line from They Live.
They Live.
My favorite lines from any movie is, you know, here are two reasons, to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum. I love that line, and I just have to say that... you know, that's been an influence on my life, and I don't even
know. Oh, that's great. I have to give credit to who Roddy Piper wrote that line.
My question. I was going to ask you who actually came up with that line.
Okay, I'll explain it to you.
Sure.
When I first started working with Roddy, I was working on the scripts, and he gave me this notebook he used to take around with him. And essentially what he would do is jot down lines for the interviews when he was in his various matches. So he would come up with something about this wrestler or this wrestler, what he was going to do. And he was wrestling Playboy Buddy Rose at the time, I believe. That's what was written down. And he came up with a line, I'm here to chew bubble gum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubble gum. And I thought, well, that's a great line.
That's a great line.
That's really good. And used it in the movie. And now, but I have to give him credit. He wrote it.
Ah. Yeah, I love that line. It's definitely a classic one. Mm. And another question I wanted to ask you, too, and going back to Halloween a little bit, but, with the Rob Zombie remake of Halloween, I just wanted to get your take on that. And to me, I find it, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and not that his remake is a complete imitation. It's not. It's a different story. But, what is your opinion on that film just your opinion in general on how that film was and the intentions behind it and everything.
Yeah, I don't want to comment on that.
Okay.
Rob did his version of the movie.
Sure.
Okay.
And no
that's
problem.
That's what he wanted to do, and that's what he did.
Absolutely.
So what I think of it doesn't matter.
Okay, not a problem. I just figured out, I wanted to ask that because I was curious, but absolutely not a problem. One of the things I also did want to ask you, now, you've worked with some amazing actors and actresses through your history of making movies. Some of the ones that come to mind a lot, of course, Kurt Russell and Jeff Bridges.
Yep.
Guys you worked with several times. So I had this dream question. Now, if John Carpenter, somebody calls you tomorrow and offers you this amazing script and says, the budget is unlimited, you can hire anybody you want, who does John Carpenter want to play as his leading man, his leading woman, and his villain?
Oh, man, what a great question that is. Well, it depends on the script, you know. I don't have a one-size-fits-all. I would probably go, first and foremost, to one of my favorite actors, probably Kurt Russell. Mm. Just because I've worked with him before and I know him and admire his talent so much. But there are other actors and actresses I'd love to work with. That's an impossible question to answer. It's impossible. I mean, I loved working with Jeff Bridges. He was just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
I loved working with Sam Neill.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I loved working with Amber Heard. I loved working with...
Yeah.
Oh, it goes on and on. So I couldn't really pick. Plus, if I pick somebody... the rest of them will get mad at me.
Oh, true.
So the best answer for that would be all of them.
You see, that's why I need you guys around.
Unlimited budget, so you can
get me out of trouble.
I'm casting all of them.
We're here.
And they all do so many things well, and they've done so many different things well in different aspects.
Elvis Presley.
That's what I was saying. You mentioned Kurt Russell, and I remember watching the Elvis movie. I thought that was brilliant as well.
Yeah, we really loved that.
I first met Kurt.
I think Kurt and I
worked on that together, and I really wasn't aware of him before that. I didn't know about his Disney career.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because he had such a past with Disney, and you get to see the major differences, the way he reacts, and not just the Elvis, but some of the horror films, if we could.
Sure.
And the range
Kurt was
that
just
he has.
A brilliant actor, and he's You know, I think even now he's really underrated as an actor. I think he's not gotten the acclaim that he deserves, and he's also a friend. So I love Kurt, and he was just brilliant as Elvis Presley. Man, man, you couldn't do better than that.
No, you really absolutely couldn't. It was very convincing, and it came at a time when we really needed that. You know, just to wake up television a little bit. It was good. We always liked Elvis.
And there's been many people that have portrayed Elvis since then, and it's still in my mind. If anyone asks me, what's the definitive Elvis Presley movie?
Yeah, it's Kurt
there
Russell.
There you go. So yeah. Kurt Russell's
there
Elvis.
There you go, guys.
So
there you go. You guys are geniuses.
Yeah. Hey, to solve a bet, Jeff Bridges, was nominated for Starman, right? For
that's right.
Academy Award?
Oh, see, we were uncertain. I was like, I think
did
so.
Did he win?
No, he did not win.
Oh, but he should.
But he won later. He won later for what the hell was it?
Oh,
that movie Tenderheart. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Where he played the country singer, right?
Uh huh.
Yes.
I thought it was the one with Michelle Pfeiffer on the piano.
That's right.
No. But that
was the younger brother. Right.
But
how about horror movies? Did you have a personal favorite horror movie? Actually, a two-part question. Any horror movie that got you interested initially and horror movies that you've seen since you've been director, producer, writer, and all else that kind of you wanted to give a nod to?
Wow, there's just a lot of good movies made. I grew up in the 50s watching movies back then, so I think probably the movies that influenced me the most come from back then, and I can still remember being terrified at them for various reasons. Now they all look, many of them look pretty silly, but back then they
were all young,
profound, you know.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
But I think horror keeps evolving. It keeps getting better. And I love it when directors and writers try something new with the genre. Now, there was a movie made several years ago. It was a Swedish film, I think, or maybe, anyway, I'm not quite sure, called Let the Right One In.
Oh, yes, I've seen
that. And boy, was that good. Mm. And that was a brand new, kind of unique take on the vampire myth. Mm. And when somebody tries something like that, I really respect it. So.
And the central character was a young adult, like a middle school age type of teenager.
That's right. Really strange, but really well done.
And
film.
Really, yeah, I agree with you. And they made an English remake of it, which wasn't bad, but the original really is fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about a few other actors that I really admire that you've had the chance to work with. One of my favorite actors of all time is James Woods.
Jimmy Woods, on
Vampires, which was you know, and that's another thing that ties in. You know, you make this movie in 1998, Vampires, and here we are, you know, 10 years later. There's a huge revolution of vampires everywhere.
Yeah.
So you were making this movie way before the revolution of vampires. And the vampires have been around forever. I mean,
but it stood out though.
You know, the Nosferatu stands out to me as my favorite vampire genre movie. But this is the first take I think of vampires really. In a different light than they're usually portrayed. Mm-hmm. And James Woods being a phenomenal actor.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
What was it like working with him?
Well, he's an interesting human being. He can be very challenging for you if you're not used to him. But I got along real well with him. And we became friends. He loves to ad-lib. He loves to ad-lib his lines and situations, and he doesn't tell you beforehand. He just does it.
And
it can be surprising if you're expecting him to follow the script. I finally made a deal with him. I got him to try a version. Just try a version as it's written. And let me decide later. But I really did love working with him. And it was a different choice for a horror film and an action hero, you know?
We
hadn't seen anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. But it came across well. I mean, he did a good job in it, and the movie was really in your face as far as, you know, the whole genre, you know, the vampire genre is concerned. We really liked that.
So as a director, when people do that, when they ad-lib and they think that they've got a better line than what's in the script, how do you handle that? Do you go with by situation? If you like what they happen to do, then you maybe go with that? Or do you just say, whoa, that was terrible. Let's just go by the script. I mean,
no, you don't want to do that because the director's job is to make the actor be his best or her best, do the best job. And as long as the line they're giving, the ad-lib line, doesn't change my narrative, doesn't suddenly change the story, and I'm open to it. You know, try something. Try something that fits better for you. But occasionally, the line as written is better, and so you want to kind of gently guide the actor back towards that position. Very gently.
Gently three times, yeah.
That's
gently.
Right. So that's
you know, actors are, listen, fellas, actors are vulnerable, very talented human beings. They do things that we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get a lot of respect for it, but a really talented actor is an amazing, amazing creature. So you want to respect and love them.
Yeah. And I could see that, how that would work in your films, because you have such dynamic layering of the human element, you know, and the how they all correspond to the supernatural. It's brilliant. My personal favorite of all your films was The Thing, and I really, really loved that movie. And to this day, we, you know, once a year for my daughter's birthday, we all sit around and watch it because it's her favorite movie, too. So,
how old is your daughter?
She's 20 now.
Oh, very good. Now,
but
I
promised her I'd ask this question, but it's on my behalf, too. They came out with a version of the film. And I'm not going to react to what I thought of it, but it seemed like it was in prequel form, so it paid good homage, at least, to this movie of yours that we loved so much. Any thoughts ever about making a sequel to it?
Well, you know, there was a comic book back in the 80s that was put out by Dark Horse Comics. Mm. It was a 3 or 4-parter. On The Thing, and I thought that would make a great sequel. Mm. The comic started with MacReady and Childs walking in the snow after what we saw happened, and I thought that would have been great, but frankly, I don't think I'll ever get around to making a sequel. I don't think they'll ever get around to making one, because the last one they did, the prequel, was not hugely successful.
Mm.
And the only way get sequels made is if they make bucks.
Right.
Bucks.
It's all bottom line. Well, I think a lot of people like me did not go see that film because I took it personally.
Oh, God,
I liked your movie so much. It was like a slap in the face. Why would they have to, I didn't know it was a prequel. I just thought it was a lackluster attempt, like some of these remakes of horror film, to bring people back based on somebody else's talent, you know, and somebody else's gift. So that's why
you're a very sensitive guy, aren't you?
He is a very sensitive guy.
Some might say oversensitive.
Johnny takes your films very personally.
I just,
so listen now, fellas. I have to go meet my drug dealer, so let's wrap this up.
Absolutely. Well, I do appreciate you the time here. Let me ask you one last question, because I know everybody out there wants to know. What's next for John Carpenter? What's going on? Is there anything you're working on now?
Well, I'm working on a variety of projects. I have a comic book I'm working on. I have a couple movies that I'm working on. But right now, I'm heavily involved in playing this brand new video game, Dead Space 3.
Oh, yes.
It is awesome.
It is awesome.
Awesome. I recommend it to everyone.
Ah. Do you like the multiplayer or the campaign?
Oh, no, on multiplayer, hell no. Are you kidding? Some young kid's going to get on and kick my ass. I'm not going to have that happen.
Excellent. So where's the best source for people to go and find out what's going on with John Carpenter and what's going to be happening next and all the information so out there?
Well, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, check it out. I have my own website, so come and visit me, ask me some questions if you want. And this has been really fun with you guys, I have to tell you.
We really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I really appreciate it very much, and we look forward to whatever John Carpenter has to offer in the future, and certainly everything you've given us already. We certainly love it and appreciate, again, you taking the time out of your schedule to be with us today.
We thank you for
you
the
got
honor.
It, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks. Have a great day, Sean. Now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You too.
All right, folks, that was John Carpenter.
John Carpenter.
The legend, the man, the myth, the legend, and probably one of the all-time greatest directors of all time, not just of horror, but many genres. Just going through his IMDb here, and you see Assault on Precinct 13, which I wanted to bring up because
yes.
that was one of the most atmospheric and wonderful movies of all time, where the people were trapped inside of the police station, and you know, they shut down all the power lines and the phone lines, and oh, what a great movie! And that's been remade by somebody else. You know, the thing is, you know, you're a great director and great filmmaker when you know, half of your movies that you've made have been remade by somebody else.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Whatever you think of the remakes, they had to be great movies to begin with in order for somebody to remake them.
Yeah.
But, of course, Halloween, the Elvis TV movie, The Fog, Escape from New York, The Thing, Christine. Stephen King's Christine. I mean,
love
who wasn't
that.
Freaked out by a car? If someone can make you freaked out by a car,
yeah.
they're a good director. Starman, which can make you cry.
Yep.
And
nominated for an Academy Award.
Up for an Academy Award. Jeff Bridges. Big Trouble in Little China, again, Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Prince of Darkness with Alice Cooper. I mean, what a wonderful movie. They Live, Roddy Piper. Memoirs of an Invisible Man, a comedy with Chevy Chase, which actually is pretty funny.
Yeah, it was good.
And pretty funny. Body Bags, which is a TV movie, In the Mouth of Madness, and the list goes on and on. Escape from L.A., which was really the sequel to Escape from New York.
Escape from New York, yeah.
And if you haven't seen The Ward, John's most recent movie from 2010, 2011, Netflix or your local video store.
It's worth checking out.
Oh, my God, it's awesome. Yeah. That was an amazing. I have to tell you. I love all of our guests, but I'm on cloud nine right now, Chip.
Oh, yeah. How about that? I mean, John Carpenter. How magnificent
and
is that?
And what a just nice guy.
Yeah, really, really cool guy. Neat sport.
We're the best in paranormal radio. Preserving history. One spirit at a time.
Fans of Light and Night Vision Experts. We are the number one for top quality portable LED illuminators and camera accessories. Our 25 LED infrared light lasts over 12 hours on one 9-volt battery. As seen on TV shows such as Ghost Adventures, The Haunting, My Ghost Story, Paranormal Challenge, The Ghost of Alcatraz, and more. Also, it's been used by professional film crews around the world. Available in infrared, full spectrum, ultraviolet, green, and video light. Infrared and full-spectrum cameras designed and modified by Phantom Light. Custom-made brackets and other accessories. The best in customer service with top reviews everywhere. Follow us on Facebook, search for Phantom Light LLC. Or go to www.phantomlightlite.com.
...1974. Exorcism, paranormal activity, and possession. Souls still roam the quaint house in Hinsdale. Numerous mediums, psychics, paranormal investigators claim to this day that there is still an immense amount of paranormal activity. To get your experience, book an overnight tour, come to a monthly meetup group. Email HinsdaleHauntReservations@yahoo.com or find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/The Hinsdale House. In 2013, can you survive the haunted Hinsdale House?
Another beautiful morning in a quiet town.
I think you might have found a new species here.
Ah! Mark, you need to tell me what in the hell's going on, please.
Thankless job.
It's an alien bacteria from another world.
What do you want me to say? That the world's being invaded by aliens?
Ombus 2013. Visit DeftonePictureStudios.com for more information. This film's not yet rated.
Ideal Event Management is your top-rated paranormal events organizer. They represent some of the biggest names in the paranormal community. Whether you need help putting together your event, looking for a celebrity, or just want to pump up the excitement, Ideal Event Management can help you. Contact Mark at 413-478-3642 or check out their website at idealeventmanagement.com. You'll be glad you did.
Hi, kids. This is Michael Berryman.
And here he is. Welcome back to Keeping the Spirits Alive. It's been a few weeks, but welcome back, Mr. John Tenney. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We are great.
We are great. We're even better now that you're back with us. We appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to join us tonight. And what a wonderful show it's been so far. It's going to get better.
Yeah.
But we do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Sure.
Chip?
Oh, really? I have the honor bestowed upon me to ask. John Tenney, what's weird?
Well, I'll tell you what's weird. I will wish you and all of the listeners a happy Seidenschlafer dog.
Oh, thank you.
I think I ordered one of those in Chicago once. It came with the cucumbers and bell peppers.
I had mine with cheese.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody is celebrating Seidenschlafer tog. Mm-hmm. I'm sure all your listeners are dancing around, celebrating. I'm sure you guys are as well.
I have my skirt on. Oh, was that out loud?
We always dance around and celebrate, though, so that's not unusual.
This is actually the holiday that I'm speaking of. Seidenschlafertag is actually being celebrated in Germany today.
Ah.
It's the day of the seven sleepers. Do you know this story?
No.
No. I thought you were talking about Simon Cowell's dog, you know, so I'm completely out of the loop here.
No, I don't know that story. Please inform us.
This is the story that back in 250 AD, the Roman Emperor Decius put seven Christians in a cave and locked them up, and they were released when the stone was moved away from the cave. 180 years later, they awoke and came back out into the world.
Hmm. Wow.
That is weird. I wonder how, I mean, what sources does this come from? How is it a story 250 AD? I mean, what has been dictated over the years from this to, you know, for any type of verification that this may be indeed be a true or thought to be a true legend?
And, you know, it's a story that is told in many different forms throughout different. There's a Syriac version that was printed in 387 AD. There are stories that's even told in the Quran. They have their own version of it, although that they say it was 300 years that the sleepers were locked in the cave. There's lists in Roman martyrology that talk about the seven sleepers of Ephesus, and that's where we get the date July 27th from. So there are a ton of old Roman writings about the seven sleepers, and I think the only place that their awakening is celebrated still to this day is in Germany.
I think Poughkeepsie, they have a salute to Rip Van Winkle somewhere. I know we've driven past it. So I'm sure maybe in that area, you know, since they're honoring, you know, long rest.
I wonder if there's any connection between this Seven Sleepers story and other, I don't know why this popped into my mind, probably because I'm feeble-minded, but I thought of the Seven Dwarfs. and Sleepy is one of the Seven Dwarfs.
Well, there are a lot of
legends come from other
weird
legends.
Parallels to Walt Disney.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, see, this is why I think it's weird. This is, and you brought up Rip Van Winkle, which is a great tie-in to it as well, because, again, we deal a lot of times with ever-growing narratives and folklore and mythology and how a story is passed down. So it very may well be the Seven Dwarfs in a cave. It very well be the American version, or, you know, Rip Van Winkle is the American version of the Seven Sleepers. But we do seem to have, you know, even the strangest stories can be traced, you know, back into,
250,
you know, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago.
Those were good
whether
times
or not it's
back then.
The story of I talked one time about the story that people know all over the country of a school bus that gets hit on train tracks, and you park your car on and the ghosts push you off the train tracks. People have heard that story ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a directly traceable story back to the African-American slaves who told a story about a cart full of slaves that was hit by a train, and if you park your cart on it, the slave ghosts will push you off of the train track.
Yeah, it's like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
And ironically enough, if you park your car in my parking spot, it will get pushed out of the way as well.
Yes,
maybe or maybe not by a ghost.
I think it was the neighbor's dog. I put an infrared camera up.
But that is funny how these legends become other legends. And you know, a lot of people know that story about the school bus, and now that if you do some... if anyone does some research, you can find many other locations where similar incidents happen. But if you trace those legends back, they always stem from something from much earlier besides the incident that is supposedly reported from.
Yeah, it's just like Bill Edwards. You know Bill Edwards.
Right.
He produced this movie, Please Talk With Me, that we've been raving about for months and months and months. And this guy is so special. that when he was born on May 5th, all the Mexicans threw a big holiday.
Oh, Jesus. So,
and I thought that was cool. You know,
wow.
Nobody does that for me.
I honestly thought you wouldn't bring that up again on another show. But who knew? Well, you brought that up on ironically May 5th.
For almost a year now. So,
well, why do the Mexicans celebrate mayonnaise anyways? I don't understand it.
But it's very fascinating to me, you know, especially like those changing narratives and those folkloric stories, because pre-internet, before we had the internet, those many years ago, it was really strange to, I mean, you would hear these stories and local legends from different people. I would as I traveled around, and because I was traveling so much, I would hear the same story, but other people didn't. But now you can see with the internet, like, people are like, oh, that story happened here too. Oh, this story happened here too. And if you trace them back, what's really interesting is that most of the time those stories never happened.
Right. And that's usually what we find out. But because they have become legend, the legend always grows and it always changes. And I think that happens more often than not with any legend, no matter how old it is. You could look at urban legends even, and they still change from teller to teller and from place to place. And one urban legend may originate in one location, but by the time it's got around the country, the location has completely changed, the incidents have changed, and everything changes.
But
and
there is a consistency.
There's a consistency to the basis of the story, right? That doesn't change, but everything else will happen to.
I remember that when I was in fifth grade, the big thing was that Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver grew up to be Alice Cooper. That was a huge rumor, and everybody thought that Alice
Cooper. I remember that rumor as well.
Yeah, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Until you mentioned it, I just had forgotten about that, but I do remember hearing that.
Yes, yeah, see?
That's not true, though, right?
John Tobin is out of the loop on this one.
Well, now I want to know, is it true?
But no, Eddie Haskell actually became a Los Angeles police officer. He was a Chips.
Oh.
And, of course, I would remember that because of the name of the police force. But, yes, and then Alice Cooper.
You always bring it back around to you, don't you, Jim?
Well, of course, because it always is about that's me how you, somehow.
Well, that's the only way you can remember anything, actually.
Right.
You know, and then I do remember when I was growing up, the rumors of, speaking of legendary stories in pop culture and music, we weren't actually speaking about that, but now I am. The rumor with the backwards Beatles records and Paul McCartney actually dying,
being
dead,
man.
Paul is dead, man, miss him, and all that sort of thing, which was a great publicity stunt.
The Abbey Road cover when he's
millions of people actually thought Paul McCartney was dead.
Yeah,
when that happened.
Well, they made it. I mean, it's just all the coincidences were just so beyond statistical. You know, I mean, how could all that stuff? And we still don't know, and most, you know, I mean, he's still alive. He'll be the last to go. Yeah.
So they say.
But you just wonder, you know, if any of that was engineered at all, or if it was just a series of remarkable coincidences.
I would have to think it was engineered.
I would like to think that it was engineered, but also, I mean, we deal, when we're dealing with paranormal phenomena, we deal with the fact that we know our brains are these pattern recognition machines, and that we look and find every single thing that matches up, and we kind of discard the stuff that doesn't fit the narrative that we're looking for. That's one of the big problems that we have. Yeah. My house, before I bought my house, sat empty for 3 years. It only ever had one owner. And my house, when I bought it, all the neighbors told me, you know, the guy who originally lived here had died in the house. He had been here for weeks before anybody found him. All the kids in the neighborhood knew the house was haunted. And for years, the legend about my house had built up around the neighborhood to the point to where the kids in the neighborhood are still kind of weirded out by my house, but now because I live in it, right? Because I do what I do, like, before I bought the house, I did, you know, moments worth of research and found out the guy had gotten sick and they moved into hospice, and he lived for a couple of years in hospice and died, you know, 150 miles away from the house, and it's, you know, no one ever died here. So, you know, the neighbors built up the legend of the house, and if I wouldn't have been who I would have been, I would have continued to believe the rest of my life that someone had died in my house and everybody knew this house was haunted.
Yeah, because it's easy to just believe what other people tell you and just go on with it, you know?
Hey, you guys know what happens when you play Keeping the Spirits Alive backwards? a little voice comes on and says, go watch The Voice. It's amazing. So don't ever listen to the show backwards. It's bad news.
See, I heard go watch Dancing with the Stars. So,
guess see, it's really all interpretation.
On what software you use to play.
That's right. But don't do either one of those things. That's obviously the devil sending messages to you. So just keep listening to us
Kelly,
and forward.
Kelly Pickler won, so I just spoiled Dancing with the Stars for everybody. And
I didn't even know she was on
if
it.
If I had watched
it, I didn't know she was on
That's
it
proof
either.
That you watch it, Chip.
Wow. No, I actually saw it posted on The View or something else that I really shouldn't watch that do watch.
Wow, anyway.
That's during the day.
I'm too busy living in my formerly haunted house.
That's right.
Yeah, but you know what?
With moments of research it took to dispel that, and I love that you do moments of research.
But to my theories, you know, just because this person didn't die in your house, did you ever find out, is your house haunted from who knows? Is it haunted at all or no?
You know, I have that concept. I've talked about it at lectures, and I've talked about it on weirdlectures.com. I really think if any place is haunted, every place is haunted.
Yeah.
You know, there have been, I think the estimate that I used on Weird Lectures, there have been 50 billion deaths on this planet since human beings have been on this planet. And so if you said even half for some reason remained ghosts, then you're talking about 25 billion ghosts. And then you look at the habitable land masses where people have lived. And I actually did the math on my website, and it breaks down to about 11 ghosts an acre of land. So they're pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I believe they're pretty much everywhere as well, and I also don't believe there necessarily has to be a direct connection between death and spiritual energy and what we may be able to contact or communicate with. I've seen photos of mysterious footprints around Christmas time on your house. I remember seeing that.
Oh, that happened on the roof of the garage where there was snow, and my neighbor said that my neighbor's daughter actually said she saw someone standing on the roof of my garage, and I went out the next morning, and there were just two. A single set of footprints standing in the snow on the roof of my garage, and no footprints on the ground around my garage. Very strange.
Very bizarre.
Especially if they were small gray footprints, that would be really
strange. Well, Mr. Tenney, thank you so much again for joining us this week.
Yes.
As always, it's been a pleasure. Do you have anything coming up that you might want to mention to the listeners, your fans?
People can check out my events. There's an event page on weirdlectures.com, and you know, they can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/weirdlectures and on Twitter at John E. L. Tenney. But aside from that, happy Seib and Schlafertag to all of them. And I don't suggest anybody sleep for 180 years.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. And appreciate your
right.
time, and have a great night.
Yes.
You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And in his honor, we'll take a nap.
That's right. And that pretty much wraps up another week here.
Oh, how about this week, John?
How about it? Join us again next week when we have another show.
That's right. And another awesome, amazing guest.
We do. Thanks again so much for listening. Keeping the spirits alive. Have a happy Hopper Schlagen Doggen or whatever that was.
Yes. And happy Simon Cowell's Dog Day to all of you.
Good night and talk to you later.
Yes. Thanks
see you next week on
us.
Keeping the Spirits Alive.